10, 9, 8,
7, 6, 5.
Hey everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of Am I Allowed to Like Anything? The podcast that talks to people about their work, their lives, and how they are maintaining their optimism in this world. I'm your host, Darian Simone Harvin, and before we get into this episode, I have a really exciting announcement. On Thursday, June 29th, Am I Allowed to Like Anything is having its first live show in New York City. Sopan Deb joins me, and I'm really excited because not only is he a culture writer at the New York Times, but he's also a stand-up comedian. And so I think we're going to have a really great conversation about the intersection of pop culture and politics, which is what he writes about at the New York Times. And the audience will also get to hear some stand-up comedy from Sopan. The live recording is free 99, so you can RSVP to the link that's in this week's episode's description, and the link is all over my social media accounts as well, at Darian Simone. Now this week, Yahya Mazurkovic joins me. I met Yahya on the internet when I first moved to New York City, and since then we've really started to collide in some of the same friend groups and just continue to support each other in some of the work that we're trying to do. And so we talk about some of the drastic changes that come from moving to the Bronx after a life in the Dominican Republic, her days in New York City's nightlife and working the doors at downtown clubs, her job as an experiential producer at the agency Translation, how she feels about people, and why she is taking back her hours spent at the hair salon. Remember that you can rate and subscribe to Am I Allowed to Like Anything on iTunes. And if you love this week's episode, please do review it and rate it on iTunes. You can listen on SoundCloud and always join the conversation using the hashtag AIATLA. Yahya, I want everyone to first and foremost know that we are drinking beer out of sippy cups.
Fuck yeah.
Salud.
Hell yeah.
I'm really glad to have you here.
Can I curse a lot?
Yes.
Okay,
this
great.
Is explicit.
Great.
On the iTunes store that I've yet to be featured on yet. That's a whole other story.
We're going to make it happen.
We're going to make it happen. How are you feeling today?
Stressed and overwhelmed, but alive and feeling great then.
You know what? If I were to choose a description for how I feel, it would be the same way.
Yeah.
So we're on the same page. Here's the first thing that I want people to know is that we are friends.
Like, yes.
We both know each other.
Yes.
And not only do we know each other from the quote-unquote scene, we were literally following each other on the internet.
Truth.
God only knows how we found each other. I remember it was through Twitter.
I think it was through Twitter. That's how I mainly find all of my Instagram people that I follow.
That's very true. Because if I don't like, used to be popping.
Yeah, because I don't like what you have to say, I don't want to follow you. Like, the only people that I follow that I don't care about their, like, voice, it's mainly, like, people that are, like, visually brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, like, follow girls because they post, like, cute selfies. That's not my shit. And you don't do that. I like your stuff. I like your look. I like your feel. I think you care about your feed, unlike me. So
you think I care about my feed?
Yeah, your shit looks curated.
I'm glad.
Your shit looks curated. My shit does not.
I've been trying a lot harder. But I also thought your shit looks curated. Okay, we're both fooling each other, honestly. So I guess we're playing the game right.
Yeah.
At least we're playing the game right.
I mean, if you believe it, then yeah.
But I think I started following you because I realized that you were like this New York chick who didn't really care what other people thought about them.
That's exactly what I am.
You still are.
That's exactly what I am.
But at that time, you had blonde hair. You were partying almost every night.
Yeah.
True or false?
True.
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 And it just came, I don't know, the universe kind of brought us together through what we do. And so it's kind of crazy that we're now, like, friends.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I just really want people to know that. I like to be transparent about how I connect with people who come on my podcast. And so there are certain things I know about your life. There are certain things that I don't. And one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you on is because what is one of the big themes? What is one of the big themes about my podcast is that I am interested in bringing on people who are working really hard right now. And in 5 or 3 or whatever, however many years, people are going to be Googling you because they want to know more about you. And this podcast is going to show up. And they're Googling you because you're doing something really fucking popping, right?
I hope you're fucking right, Dan.
I
hope you're
fucking right. I am right. And so let's start with the basics. And then I want to talk about NYC nightlife. I want to talk about what you're doing now and why you are still doing it. And I want to actually talk about some things that you are actually loving in culture as someone who has been navigating the center of it for I say so long as if we are like 50 years old, but I'm tired.
Yo, I'm constantly tired. I'm dying right now.
How'd you grow up?
Well, before we start, I want to just say that like I've met a lot of really good friends of mine because of the internet now. And it's not just such a scary thing as it was before. Mm. And I think that more people should be open to it and welcome to it.
Agreed.
And I think that the internet's not a scary place. I obviously am not endorsing Tinder or Bumble or anything like that because I'm not down at all. But I am endorsing like women meeting women through the internet. Like I've met so many awesome women that
Agreed.
Have like changed my life because of the internet. So I think it's a great place to meet people.
Yes. I think you're right because it can kind of become this shady thing where one person doesn't want to say hi to the other person because they know them.
Yeah.
Or because they don't know them, but they know them from the internet. And then we get kind of pretentious. And anyways, yes. So this is endorsed. This is a beautiful connection because now look, here we are.
Exactly.
So, Yaya, what's your full name?
My real name is Yehevni Mazurkovich Nunez.
Mazurkovich.
Mazurkovich, yeah. You want to hear my whole story?
Yes.
All right. Dope.
Here we go.
So I was born in the Dominican Republic in the second capital, they call it. It's called Santiago. I lived there until I was about 9 years old. We immigrated to the Bronx. So I came into America in the middle of the third grade.
How was it learning English? Or were you already learning English in DR?
Well, I have been here my entire, like, I have been coming to the U.S. since I was literally, like, in my mom's stomach.
Okay.
So I did kindergarten here. But then I did first grade, second grade, and then most of third grade over there. So I didn't know English when I came here anymore. It had completely, like, left me.
Right.
So thank you to the beautiful staff at PS 340 in the Bronx. I was able to learn English in a matter of 6 months and be completely out of ESL class by the end of fourth grade. So going into fifth grade, I was fully in a full of like English American classes. How did I grow up? I grew up in what some would call extreme poverty. I grew up, well, in the Dominican Republic, we had a very nice life. Mm-hmm. I grew up with my own room. We had a nanny, had a cleaning lady that would come and help my mom out. My dad had a car. My dad had a full-time job. We had insurance. It was a really beautiful life that I lived up until the age of 9. And then we came to America to live with my uncle and his family where, like, me and my mom shared a twin bed. Mm-hmm. And we lived with him up until we got to, like, until I got to maybe the sixth grade until my mom could get her own apartment because my other uncle came to the United States. And so we decided to move in together to another one bedroom apartment.
And at the reason, do you remember being 9 and asking why are we moving to the Bronx or why are we moving to America?
I didn't know that it was permanent. I thought that because we had been traveling back and forth from the U.S. that it was kind of like another thing, like, oh, it's another trip to the U.S. Like, we're just going to spend another summer here and we're going to go back. And then my mom, like, kind of broke it down, like, hey, like, you're not going back. And I'm like, but I don't want to share a bed with you for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And the move from a middle class life to poverty has affected me until this day, like, psychologically and mentally and in a whole bunch of other different ways. But I do credit growing up the way that I did to the way that I am now. And I'm very thankful and I wouldn't have it any other way. And I'm so glad that my parents were able to take such a bold move and put us before them and make the choices that they had to, because not a lot of people are willing to sacrifice a nice, comfortable life so that their kids could have a better future. Mm-hmm. And
was that the reasoning?
Yeah, 100%. When you receive a free education in the Dominican Republic, it's nothing like what you would be able to receive here. And it's not like my parents could, like, they saw that in a couple of years life was going to get only more expensive and that they wouldn't be able to afford all those nice things. And, you know, by the last year that we were in DR, we weren't going to private school anymore because it was getting more expensive and, like, the company that my dad was working at was failing. So there were a whole bunch of factors that played into it. But I think that it was super bold for my mom to come to the U.S. Without her husband and to be able to say, I'm going to dedicate my entire life to these kids and not look any other direction but to us. So, like, my mom is my savior and I praise her. But, yeah, grew up in a one-bedroom for most of my life. More and more family members would come and live with us. Like, at one point, there'd be, like, maybe, like, 9 to 10 people and living in a one-bedroom apartment. That'd be my uncle, his wife, his daughter, my cousin, my mom, my two brothers, and then whoever else needed a couch to surf on. And I'm also very thankful for that because it breeds a sense of community and also independence and dependability. And it taught me a lot. Like, when I was growing up in DR, I didn't have to clean. I didn't have to do dishes. I didn't have to do anything except for, like, clean my room and play around. And when we moved to the United States, it was like, you have to clean the bathroom every single weekend.
Like, you might have to go get some groceries for me.
Well, like, every day. Like, it was like my whole perspective on life changed, and I became kind of like the woman of the house because my mom would be working all the time. So I raised my two brothers and I raised most of my cousins because my mom would babysit them. So I always say I don't have to have kids because I raised a lot of them already. I literally did. Yeah. I have my brothers, my youngest brother's name tattooed on me because of that, because I feel like he's my child. And I don't know, like, out of all of my friends, I'm the one that's always, like, quickly solving problems. Like, I have, like, if the sink is clogged, I have no problem sticking my raw hand in there and fixing it. I have no problems managing tools. I can spackle a wall. I can lay down some brick if you needed me to. And I'm not very scared of a lot of, like, physical labor and, like, labor-intensive work. And I can build stuff, and I credit to that, and I can clean my own home, and I'm not scared of any of that stuff, and I don't think that stuff is yucky. I'm not scared of worms. Like, I'm not, like, a screamer. Like, if I
throw up doesn't bother you.
No, like, I can deal with a lot of things that a lot of other American people wouldn't be able to. I feel that, like, no offense, but I feel like American kids and American people overall are pretty sheltered, and I don't have that at all. And even when we were growing up in DR, I was playing with dirt, walking around barefoot, stepping on cow shit all the time. And so it's kind of like that upbringing that I hope that if I do ever decide to reproduce, I'd give my kids the same thing. I want my kids to feel like they could lay down cement and they could measure it and they could do that, because I feel like I could do that because I saw my dad do it. And, like,
and you could do it.
Yeah. And I always hope that people that I meet have those kinds of things and that aren't scared. And I think that that's why I'm a producer now, because of those situations.
Now, because of everything that you're saying makes so much sense for what you're doing now.
Yeah.
Because as an event planner and someone who, you know, people
use I don't like to call myself an event planner, by
I know,
the way.
I was gonna say.
I'm an experiential producer.
You're an experiential producer. Thank you for correcting me.
No worries.
Event planner is such a techie word to describe you, honestly.
I don't, like, event planning means that I, like, plan, like, birthday parties and weddings to me. Like, and I don't plan event parties and weddings. I plan anything. I plan, like, I can't even describe the things that I've done, because it's, like, it's anything from, like, a simple activation where could drive across, like, all of, like, New York's 5 boroughs with, like, a wrapped vehicle and a celebrity in there and, like, do, like, content to creating a multi-million-dollar festival in Philadelphia. I do lots of stuff. I get briefs sometimes that, like, I'm like, I've never done that before, but we can do it. And we can.
And you do.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with taking on new things. So that's why I'm an experiential producer, because I don't plan events. I don't plan parties and things like that.
Because essentially you build things.
Building. I do build things.
So what I wanted to say was that everything that I know that you're doing now makes so much sense, because you don't flinch. It doesn't seem like you're flinching or you get super nervous at what you're doing now. Your life has been your education in a lot of ways. What you're doing now might not be as tough or not as much at stake in the same way of, like, being a human or livelihood, but for you, it's like, I can do this.
That's 100% how I feel about it, too.
Okay, good. I'm glad we're on the same page. personally, as Darian, have always been kind of fascinated with, and this was me looking at you on the internet, right? It's something we kind of haven't talked about, was just kind of how you moved around the city. And so I'm kind of interested to know, and I don't know if this is the first question to ask, but I think it'll help me to get to the answers, or not the answers, but what I want to know from you. When did you start going out? Like, when did it start to be a thing of like, I like to be around people. I like to be, I know what my personality is. This is something that I identify with. Maybe I'm wrong in the way that I'm positioning it to you.
I don't think you're wrong at all.
Okay.
I think it started when I started high school.
Okay.
I started hanging out with some new people. And they started inviting me to teen nights in the Bronx. So we would
Where were the teen nights at? See, I don't know anything about this life.
So we would go, yeah. We would go to like X Bar, and there were like clubs like Avalon and all these other places. And our friend used to, because at the time there was a huge trend uptown where it'd be like entertainments. So there was like our homie from the block where I grew up from in the Bronx is Decatur, and Kid Promoter from my block is like who always used to like invite us to these things, and he would give us tickets. And so me and my homegirls, which it used to be like a crew from our block, mm-hmm. and it was like us and like a couple of girls from like 198 and like 205th from D block, and we would just roll deep to all these parties that like even like the Flywalker guys from like 174 would have. And it, like, they used to all dance and, like, get crazy, and that's how, like, my partying started, mm-hmm. from, like, all my BX homies and teen nights. And then we started going to not teen nights, but, like, actual full-on clubs where they were all be uptown, because that's who I used to hang out with. Mm-hmm. And we would go to places like Red Lounge and, like, O Lounge, and I used to sneak in with my friend Crystal's ID, and and it was crazy because like she would be at the party and she would like pass the ID back and I would get in, yeah. and it was like one time, like for my 15th birthday, we were like at O Lounge and we had like so many Incredible Hulks, which were the most trendiest drink at the time, which was Hennessy and Hypnotic.
Yeah. Oh my god. And then
yes.
Yeah. And who Team Epiphany tried to bring those back?
Anyway. I know. Well, I don't know. They're still delicious.
Like, yeah, I know they are. No, I would drink one right now.
It's not my most shameful thing, but like it's delicious.
It's so delicious. I love Hypnotic.
I don't want to say it. I'm not going to say it. I don't mind some Hennessy in there, as you may know. shout out to Henny Palooza. Then we started sneaking into adult nights, and it was all uptown at the time. But at the same time, when I was 13, I started attending Fashion Industries High School, which was in 23rd Street. And I started basically meeting people that were from Brooklyn and from different boroughs, mm. and getting more involved with that. So I'm like me, like up until my like sophomore year, I'm mainly concentrated on like the uptown, like going out aspects and whatever. And then, like my sophomore year in high school, I started hanging out with my downtown people. Mm. And that was like my friend Melanie, which is from Brooklyn and from Harlem. And she at the time was dating, she had met this guy, Mike. And me and Melanie were always very adventurous. And so this guy, Mike, took us to our first downtown club,
okay.
which was Butter. And so there's pictures from that night that I'm like, at that time, I had been like suffering with a lot of like depression and like eating disorders and shit. So I look like a fucking skinny little like downtown bitch, but I look so cute. my hair was like all the way down to my back. And this is like when I started like straightening my hair and whatever. Right. So we went out that night, first time downtown.
Butter. Where was Butter?
It was lower East Side, whatever.
Okay.
But whatever, first night going downtown.
And then, you were hooked.
Yo, after that. And then, like, it was, like, 3-4 in the morning. And he was like, do you guys want to go to after party? And we're like, sure. And he takes us to this fucking bar called, I don't want to say the name because it might still be open. But, like, that was the first time that I ever saw, like, somebody actually do cocaine. Because mm-hmm. In the past, all of my interactions with drugs were, like, either with weed or seeing other people sell it. I didn't do it, but first time seeing it. And then after that, yeah, it was kind of like hooked, because then I met my boyfriend when I turned 16, and he was also more into the downtown scene as opposed to the uptown scene, and we started going out together a lot, and that's how it started. I would go to clubs that are like not closed, like Juliet, Kiss and Fly, all those places, and so I became a club rat. So like from the age of,
I was gonna say, how old were you, and what year, and what around what years were these?
So I graduated high school in 2009. So I want to say that like from 2008 to 2000. I don't know. Oh my God, time passes.
I want to say graduated in 2009 too. That's so crazy.
Yeah. So I want to say like from 2008 is when I started really hitting like the downtown scene, but I wasn't working in it. I was mainly just a club rat. Like I used to go everywhere with a fake ID, and they used to let all of us in because, you know, we were like cute and like we were like exotic looking and whatever, right. And so we had a lot of fun, had a lot of free vodka, and then, you know, through going out we met more and more promoters, and like our promoter, like she's like my bitch, like now, like I love this girl, India. We used to go out with her like all the time, and then when I turned 17, that's the year that I graduated high school. I graduated high school. Yeah, I graduated high school like on the cusp of 16 and 17 because I have a late birthday.
Aren't we both Sagittarius?
December 15.
That's why I'm the 7th, and that's why we have like late birthdays that make us older.
Yeah, and people think that
or
like,
younger.
People are like, oh wow, like you graduated high school so young, and I'm like, little did you know that I graduated 6 months late because I was drunk and getting high the whole time. So I was like barely in high school. Yeah. I was literally barely there. I don't know how I graduated, but I got my first job in nightlife when I was 17 at the Maritime Hotel.
Where's that at?
Maritime Hotel is, well, the parts that I used to work in are now closed, but it's still alive. The hotel is. It's right next to the Dream Hotel in Chelsea.
Oh, okay.
So that's basically it. People are always like, you hang out with so many gay men. And I'm like, that's because I grew up in Chelsea. Because my first nightlife job was when I was 17.
And what was the job?
So
were you ever a door girl?
That's how I got started.
Yeah.
So I my friend hired me as a host at the Maritime's then venue called La Bottega. And she was just like, say that you're 18 if anybody asks. And I'm like, okay, cool, whatever. So did that until it was my birthday. And then I'm like, okay, finally, I'm 18. and so I was just a host at the restaurant. Then I really wanted to get more gigs and stuff. So they had a club downstairs called Hero Ballroom. And so promoter at the time was a guy named Guy. His actual name is Guy. Guy and Nemo. Those are my two homies. My two guys ever gave me my jobs, my first two jobs in nightlife. And they used to hire me as a door girl at all of their venues that they used to book. So they had like Hero Ballroom, they had Polar, they had Chelsea. And so I used to be the door girl at all of those venues when I was 18 years old. And so I would just have to lie to the venue owners when I would arrive. Yeah. And I'd be like, yep, I'm 21. And they're like, wow, you look very young. And I'm like, yeah, but I've worked here already. Blah, blah. And like, they would eat it.
Let's talk about being a door girl for a second. Because it's a job that I feel mentally I could do, but I probably couldn't really do. And so I want to know, to me, being the person at the door has always felt like a tough job, unless you're really okay with rejecting people.
I mean, there's different kinds of door girls.
Right.
So
what kind of door girl were you?
So I had different roles. So like some door girls, your only job is to check off a guest list. Some door girls' job is to check off a guest list and add tallies per promoter. And then some door girl's job is to actually do the door, which means be the one to like actually negotiate the tables and reject people and do all that stuff. So I've been privileged enough to do all three. Mm-hmm. My first gig was as actually checking off people as they arrived, and that was at Hero Ballroom. And then my role at places like Chelsea Room would be more to monitor the promoter's actual like work. But then our doorman would get drunk at around 1 a.m. and then I'd actually be the door person.
Yeah.
And then I'd actually have to negotiate those tables and reject people. As far as that goes, I have no problem with it. I actually have fun with it. Mm-hmm. Because most people that want to go out and want to go to the places that I was doing doors at wanted to spend the money and they wanted to show out. Mm-hmm. So like if you would come to my door at Chelsea Room and you look like a dude that had money and you had like five really skinny chicks with you, I'm like, I know how you're rolling, so I know how much this is going to cost.
Right.
And if you didn't want to spend the money, then we don't need you there. But there's also like negotiation, and there's also like filling the space capacity and making the room look good. And, you know, like now I wouldn't be able to really do that job because now I'm more socially conscious and more socially aware. When as in the past, I was more superficial and more interested in like making a room look really good young. But then I've done doors when I was like 22, 23, mm-hmm. In venues in the meatpacking where like it was hard. It was harder for me then to like reject people because they looked bad because yeah. I would be like, fuck, like this is wrong. When it comes to men, I had less heart. But when it came to women, it kind of like bothered me a little bit when I would mm-hmm. turn down some people that were less attractive because it's kind of like, damn, girl, I know you want to have fun. Like, and I want to give you that fun. But yet, like, you know, it's a job just like anybody else. And like, I would get yelled at if I would let in somebody that didn't wow. fit the script and whatever. And like, you know, I'm trying to keep my job just like everybody else's. And like, if I'm doing the door and I have security guys with me and I'm like trying to manage them and like, I'm trying to make all of us look good. Right. I'm trying to make the venue.
Yeah, you're really the leader. I sometimes yeah. think that people look at, and I also know it's based off the venue, you look at security guards as kind of the leader of the night, but it almost seems like the person at the door who's also checking off the names is like managing the door.
Well, you are. The security guards are basic, unless it's like a situation where the security guard is the doorman, you have a different situation. But most of the time there is a door person and that person is the person that is like the doorkeeper. The right. most famous doorkeeper that I can name that's like the epitome of them all is Wass. Like that man is a fucking OG. Like I respect the fuck out of Wass. Wass has yeah. been at Avenue and several other venues for like a lot of years and he's a fucking boss. But like Wass isn't letting anybody into any of his spaces. Like he needs to know that he can fuck with you and that you look good and you're gonna make his room look tight. And like nobody's ever mad at Wass for that. He's doing right. his fucking job.
Right. Okay.
As I was doing club doors, I also became a bottle girl and a cocktail waitress. Okay. So I used to cocktail waitress at the other side of the Maritimes La Bottega, which is a cocktail lounge, which is like a high volume, like really big space with like 500 person seating. And like the cocktail waitressing there was ridiculous. Yeah. And then I used to do bottle service at Hero right before it closed. And we used to fucking make bank. Like, hella bank. And obviously, like, downtown bottle service isn't, like, uptown bottle
What's
service.
What's hella bank? Like, how much is hella bank?
Like, you'd walk away every night with a couple $1,000. Yeah. And okay, so I, mind you, I was 19. Right. Mind you, I was 19. Girl, that was a summer that I was like, we're going to Vegas. We're going to right. fucking LA. That was like one of the best summers of my entire life because I was paying for all my friends' food. Like, I was like, what you need? Like, because it was all cash too. So right. it was ridiculous. I was.
I want to talk about when you started working with Good Peoples and yeah. with your girl,
Katie Longmire.
Yes.
So
I want to know how you met her because I felt like, this is what I think, mm-hmm. and then you can tell me, mm-hmm. true or false. Mm-hmm. That was, to me, she seems like she was like a big sister to you.
Yeah, she is. She's like my mom more. Like I call her my club mom.
And it seems like once you met her, you got more into, it wasn't about the doors and about being a cocktail waitress. It was about being a part of creating events within nightlife. Mm-hmm. It almost felt like a level up. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, where it was mm-hmm. like, you know, Yaya's not just at the door any longer. She's like kind of running shit. She's the reason why this is happening. Mm-hmm. A lot, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So
definitely true. I met Katie when I was a cocktail waitress at Super Linda, which was
is
a
that
venue.
Still open?
No.
When did it close? Why does that sound
ago,
so
girl.
Familiar?
Long time ago, years ago.
Okay.
Because you probably went. Okay. So Super Linda was a venue that I very much loved and it's very much near and dear to my heart. So at the time I was basically like managing the downtown without the formal title. I was a cocktail waitress and I had just turned 21. But mind you, I had already been working in nightlife since I was 17.
Yeah.
So I had all those years of experience, but yet just turned 21. And this woman walks into Super Linda and she starts hosting these Friday nights. I had no idea who she was. I didn't even bother to Google her, but I had just dropped out of college because it was becoming too much because I had just also moved out of my mom's house when I was 19. And I was basically
where'd you go live?
Brooklyn. Okay. I moved from the Bronx to Brooklyn and I was like struggling to pay my rent and also go to school and do all these things. And I made myself this promise that I'm going to drop out of school And if I can't find a mentor within 6 months, I'll go back to school. And I was like, I want this woman to walk into my life that she knows exactly what she wants. I want this person to be precise. I want this person to have all this great experience and to want to actually share it with me and to, like, lead me to somewhere. And I was like, I don't know what I want to do, but I want to meet this person. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, manifested Katie Longmire.
Yeah.
Did not know when I met her, but, like, I noticed something about her behavior when she would host that she was, like, super particular. Like, if she wanted something, she would have, like, an exact time and where to put them and everything. And she was very detailed in all of her instructions, and I really liked that about her. When she would, like, she would be like, okay, so this person's going to sit here, and they're going to get here at this time, and this is what they're going to have and whatever. And I loved that about her, that she was so precise. And then I also liked all of her friends, and I liked the music that she brought in. And, like, I basically, I was like, okay, this chick is dope. And so, like, one day I just went up to her. It was, like, a Friday. And I was like, yo, I don't know what you do, but I want to help you. I don't know how I can help you, but I'm looking for, like, an internship mentor situation. And I think that I could help you. Will you let me help you? And she was like, all right, here's a stack of money. Manage it. And she told me the instructions of how to pay. She was like, I want this person to get paid out at this time. This is how much they get. And this person and this person and this person. I'm leaving now. And so she left me with all her money, and I managed it. And I would, like, and I let her know when I did everything and whatever. And then at the end of the night, she was like, okay, be at my apartment. This is the address at 10 a.m. on Monday. And I showed up with my laptop, and she was like, okay, you work for me now. So I was an intern, so I obviously didn't get paid.
Yeah.
But flash forward all these years, I'm definitely getting paid now.
Yeah.
So I worked as an intern for her for, like, I want to say it was like 6 months to a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that was I would do all of our party listings. I would assist with all of her events. Mm-hmm. And all that kind of stuff. And, like, slowly I learned, like, exactly what it is that she did, as far as, like, all of the production aspects and, like, all of the event stuff. And then I would also do her doors for her events. I would obviously get paid for any actual labor. So, like, I would,
yeah,
get paid for all of, like, things that actually mattered, like, mm-hmm, that took actual, like, physical presence, and then do all of, like, the internet stuff for free. And then I worked up my way into, like, actually getting paid for all of my time.
Yeah.
She got me my job at Translation, which is where I am currently. So that's been about 3.5 years now.
Tell me, what is your relationship with nightlife now?
So I don't like people because I'm so good with people,
mm-hmm,
because I can manipulate people, and I know that. I don't know. Like, it's like I'm too good at it, and, like, I don't, people want to have conversations with me all the time, and I don't want to have them. I don't like talking to people anymore. I've distanced myself a lot from it,
yeah,
mainly because I don't, it wasn't contributing to my health. It does things to me. Like, I really love partying. Like, I can go on a 24-hour binge if you let me. But it's not good for me. It doesn't make me feel good. So I've distanced myself a lot from it. And I don't go out for a lot of different reasons. I don't go out because I suffer with a lot of, like, depression and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And being in social settings makes me feel really nervous. And I don't know how to act. I don't know if I'm being, like any little thing will trigger me. Like, if I bump into somebody, like, that'll turn in my head, like, 16 times. Like, oh, my God, that girl hates me now. I have to go. And so I just stop going out because I don't like the way that it makes me feel anymore. I don't like the self-consciousness of it. And I don't like being engaged every 5 minutes for a job. I don't mm-hmm, like talking about what I do all the time. I don't like the small talk. I don't like the, so what have you been up to? Yeah, I've been doing this and whatever. Or, like, girl, you're killing. Like, I don't need that.
Right.
I go out now for more reasons of, like, supporting my friends.
Yeah.
If you're paying me.
Fair.
If I haven't seen something before. Like, if Paul Kalkbrenner was to be headlining something right now, I'd be there.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's somebody that I've seen 1,000 times,
right,
I don't
for,
need
like,
to be there.
For, like, purpose and intention.
Yes, exactly.
And kind of for what you're doing now is you're creating experiences.
Exactly, exactly. Like, if it's something that I have never seen before, I have to go there. I will fly wherever to go see something that I've never seen before. But if it's to see some shit that I've seen 1,000 times, no, I'm going to stay home. I'm going to take care of myself. I'm going to put a face mask on. And I'm going to do some work emails, and that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of factors that play into how I feel about nightlife now. It's my own personal health, and it's also, like, the small little nuances that I don't think that are necessary. And you know, I'm obviously young, so I should definitely be out there and talking, but I also think that I could...
I think that's such a lie.
I think, yeah, I do too, because I get a lot of freelance work that's not my full-time job, and I don't go out to find it. And I think that, like, if I put myself in the right places that aren't those exact same scenarios that everybody imagines that they are, I can get all the things that I want done. So
let's talk... I want to talk a little bit about what you are doing now and why you're doing it. Because to me, okay, you're not in nightlife the way that you used to, but you're clearly still, and you might not be talking to people in the ways that you now hate. And I also hate too, so I get it. But there's like a core, I feel, to what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that from what you've already talked about, through the way that you grew up, and through the ability to bite nails, you know what I'm saying? There's like a core to something that you're really good at and able to do, but also now enjoy the experience of executing or being a part of. And I still think that you live in this space where you are, you may not be downtown in the clubs, but you are creating things that you're imagining and planning them and producing them. And so why?
So I don't like people, but I'm really passionate about people. Like
that resonates people, with me.
I get this question a lot, and they're like, "Why do you do what you do?" And it's because my passion is genuinely being able to. I hate to use the word manipulate, but it's so real to me. I love being able to manipulate people's feelings, and I know that I can impact that from the moment that I send you your invitation to the moment that I don't send you an invitation, to the moment that I give you instructions on how to arrive, to how you get checked in, to the first thing that you are visually seeing. I know that if I'm setting up an event perimeter, and I know that if I put this wall right here, that maybe you may not want to go to the left, but you'll want to go to the right if I set that up that way. And I want to see you go to the right, because that means that I did my job right. That I actually, like, I'm getting you to do the thing. And then if after you go to the right and you see a sign that says do not enter and it makes you want to press it open, I did my job because that was intentional. And so I like to test people. I'm genuinely passionate about, like, actually seeing people's reactions to things that I make and actually genuine happiness from people. And I get, like, a hard-on when I see that I've, like, manipulated the crowd to do the exact same thing that I wanted them to do. So, for example, we did this Under Armour Steph Curry 3 event in San Francisco a couple months back, and we set up this wall at the entryway, and we lined them with these expensive-ass posters. And the goal was for that when people were exiting, they could rip the posters away from the wall without any instruction to do so. And guess what happened? One person grabbed a poster from the wall, and these were, like, stapled onto, like, a wooden wall, like, permanently there. One person ripped them off, and then guess what? Hundreds of people went up to the wall ripping those expensive-ass posters, and that was the goal, and it was met. So that shit, I was like, yes, did it. So it's tiny little things like that, or, like, knowing, like impacting somebody's, like, intuitive feelings. And that's what I'm really passionate about. Building things that can actually make people feel ways and make them do things.
Okay.
So reactions.
Reactions. Kind of. Yeah. And so because you know that you can manipulate people, you are at least trying to do it. You are at least trying to put that energy into something good.
Yeah, for sure. I'm 100%. Like, I work for brands. So there's always a marketing intent behind every single thing that I do. But I like to make it fun and for a good cause every single time. Like, I'm always the one pushing the charity aspect in everything that we do. And I'm always the one making a point to never, like, be the ones to, like, appropriate culture, to never be the ones to give an idea to somebody that is going to affect their brand negatively. So I'm, like, kind of, like, the patrol on that within my team. So I'm always very much socially conscious about every single thing that we do and making sure that we're talking to people in the right way and that we're not, like, slipping up when it comes to that kind of shit.
I see. So tell me, I sent you, I wanted to know what you're paying attention to that you, like, and enjoy. So you're looking at me like you don't remember.
No, I do. I read it. My thing about that is that people are always, like, looking for, like, a forecast on, like, trends and shit like that.
Yeah.
And it's never been like that for me.
Yeah.
Ever.
It doesn't have to
like,
be a trend.
It's for me, it's mainly, like, when I look at things, I'm supposed to automatically feel intuitively that this is the thing. And so I'm never looking for anything. I'm always just searching. And I come across things that I'm like, oh, okay, nobody's looking at this, but this is what's next.
Yeah.
And then I share that. So it's like little stupid things, like a couple months back, the fidget spinners. Like,
oh my god.
Like it's never things that really make sense, but it's always things that do make sense. Like girls wearing fishnets under shorts. We've been doing this shit for years, but now it feels right to people. The messy bun that I've been rocking since middle school is now all of a sudden a so-called trend, but it's not to me. But it makes sense why it is. Mm-hmm. It's just it's I'm never looking for anything. I just intuitively lean towards them. It's really hard to explain, but I feel like that's that very reason. My intuitive feelings towards things and objects and people are like what make me stand out amongst the crowd. Mm-hmm. And like my passion towards people is really what drives that. And yeah, that's my main thing.
I like
that
answer.
It's intuition for me. I'm never looking for anything really.
I feel like that's how, I definitely relate to that. It's not like you sit down at your computer and you're specifically looking for something, but mm-hmm. in the places that you already enjoy looking, mm-hmm. because you like what they have to say about mm-hmm. the things that you're passionate about, or the future, or because, or the music, or who they're covering, mm-hmm. or what they're talking about, mm-hmm. you start to put the pieces together.
Yeah, that's
you just start to put the pieces together.
That's definitely how it is.
Yeah. All right. Before we get into the plus one segment, tell me about your dreams right now.
I have a really big dream mm-hmm. that I'm going to definitely make it come true.
Yes. Are you about to tell me?
Yeah, I'm about to tell you. But if anybody fucking takes this idea, I'm going to fucking lose my shit. And I will find them. And since it's on this podcast, I'm actually legally owning it then. That's
okay,
fine.
Yeah.
So just so you know, a bitch has some legal experience here.
She knows them.
Well, my brother's autistic. And he creates these landscapes on paper and using aluminum foil, like a lot of them do, that are very massive and big. Like, he'll create, like, a war scene of these, like, robots shooting at each other. And, like, if this robot that's, like, at the starting point is shooting a gun, you could actually follow that bullet that's firing 2 feet over. And so he's very precise. I do wish that it wasn't always about war and guns, but that's sometimes what happens with the youth now and with their video games and their obsessions. But this happens to be his concentration. It doesn't take away from the fact that he's a very talented artist in my eyes. Mm-hmm. And he makes also, like, beautiful, like, wooden sculptures of, like, airplanes. He actually made my spice rack that we use at my house. And he makes lamps. And he's very gifted when it comes to using his hands.
How old is he?
He's 17 now.
Okay.
So my dream is to open up either a pop-up shop or an actual art gallery where I welcome in seasonally an autistic artist of a minority race to come in and take over the space, so that when somebody comes in, they could actually be walking through the mind of an autistic person. So you would be walking into like a world made out of aluminum foil if it was my brother, and you would see huge statues that he would actually make. And I want to make like an immersive experience that could actually make people enter that world as for every different artist. And I want it to be focused around minority kids specifically, because I feel that those kids are always the ones that always lack those kinds of resources that help them express themselves and whatever. So that's my goal right now. I'm blessed enough to be working with a lot of different charities and foundations that I feel like will help me make this goal come mm-hmm. to life. But I have to obviously dedicate more time and focus to it. I have a lot of work on my plate right now, mm-hmm. so it's very hard for me. But that's what I want to do for myself and my personal life next.
Yeah. I'm a little speechless. I think that's amazing. A lot of people are like, And there's nothing wrong with this. Oh, I want to do this. I want to be here. And you have a very specific.
Well, I've learned.
Tangible, too.
Yeah,
tangible.
I've learned over time that, like, I never have the right answer for, like, where do you want to be? What do you want to do? I always have the right answer when I know what I want to build. Mm. So, over the past few years of, like, my self-growth and whatever, I've changed a lot of things about how I how I envision things and whatever. And so that's my most immediate goal. And I know that when one thinks that way, that's how you get there. And who knows? After I do my first one, maybe it'll be a national campaign. Whatever. Maybe I'll start an agency after that. But I do want to own my own business one day. And I do see myself running huge things. But my most immediate goal is that one. And that's where I have my vision set as of now.
It's amazing. Alrighty, so as the people know who listen, I have one segment on my podcast, plus one segment, mm-hmm. where you can shout out something that you appreciate, person, place, thing, experience, currently. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything in mind?
I do. Something very specific.
Everybody listening should have known that you were prepared.
So I want to share this. Growing up, I was always obsessed with the way that I looked, mm-hmm. to like developing an eating disorder, to like becoming really thin and waif-like, dyeing my hair blonde, having it straightened, getting my eyebrows done, getting my nails done, teeth whitening, push-up bras, all of these things. And as of the last 2 years, I kind of like sat down with myself and like realized the workload that I was facing in my future. And I was like, okay, I basically work 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. Like, I literally have been working the last 14 days in a row currently right now. And this has been my situation for the last 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. So, like, I kind of, like, face myself and I'm like, okay. So if I'm working 7 days a week, basically only sleeping 4 to 5 hours or less than that every single day, like, currently I'm only on a couple of hours of sleep, why am I dedicating so much time to the way that I look into all these things? And that brought me to this whole Americanization, Europeanization of everybody's looks and the way that they perceive themselves and the way that they want people to perceive themselves. And I saw that within myself. So I saw myself spending 4 hours every 2 weeks in the hair salon to have it straight. Because mm-hmm. if you know me, you know I have a lot of hair. And so just to straighten my hair, it takes about that time because I have to wash it, do rollers, do a deep conditioner, whatever. It takes a Dominican woman 4 hours to straighten my hair. Mm-hmm. Then every 1 to 2 months, I'd have to drop a couple $100 on dyeing my hair blonde.
Yeah.
Then every 2 weeks, I would have to go in and get my nails done. Then every other week, I'd have to go and get my eyebrows done. Mm-hmm. And as of 2 years ago, I said no. And then as of a couple months back, I took back my actual real name. And that's because when you move to the United States, they tell you, oh, you only need one last name here. So I was like, okay, so my name is Yevhenia Mizrakovich, which then is Yaya Mizrakovich. Mm-hmm. But that's not my real name. In all my documentation and all of my legal documents, my name is Yevhenia Mizrakovich Nunez. Nunez is my mother's given name, and Mizrakovich is my dad's given name. And that's mm-hmm. how we do it in Latin culture. So I took that back. And that's another thing that I'm adding on to this is, like, actually owning who I am and not being ashamed. I haven't gotten my eyebrows done in 2 years. Can you tell? I mean, like, they're a little bit fucked up.
I was going like, to ask like, if you have or how
I,
often
I have
you
I have a pretty real unibrow, so I take out my unibrow just myself. I take out my unibrow. I take it on myself, but the shape and everything right. else I don't touch. Mm-hmm. I literally do not pluck my eyebrows. I haven't straightened my hair in a long time. If I wanted to, I could, but I choose not to.
You have beautiful curly hair for what it's
you.
Worth.
And then I don't dye my hair anymore mm-hmm. because I feel that those are things that are we're brainwashing these kids and these women to believe that they need to do these things to in order to feel and be beautiful. I've been going through a very big personal journey of self-acceptance mm-hmm. and taking back my time. Mm-hmm. I focused it in the beginning on time. My thing was like, why am I wasting so much time at all these different salons?
Yeah.
But now it's mainly like, I want to walk around as a proud brown woman and actually mean it. If I choose to make any alterations in my body, they're not because I'm following this culture that isn't mine. I'm choosing to do these alterations because this is the look that I want to go for right now because mm-hmm. it makes me happy.
Right.
Not because I feel obligated. Like, I haven't done my eyebrows and my nails in years. And then as of this month, I want to get my nails done. And so right now I have acrylics.
Okay.
And it's okay, but you want to know why? It's because my look this summer is Latina goddess. And so therefore, I'm rocking my big ass curly hair. I got on all of my gold jewelry. I'm rocking that with my long red nails. And this is my look for the summer. And then maybe next year I want to be another person.
Right.
I don't want to share natural promotion. I want to share acceptance. I want everybody to hopefully one day walk around and accept themselves in whatever shape. It may not be your natural shape, because maybe you feel that razor in your hair with down to nothing, or taking your eyebrows off is your fucking look. If that shit makes you feel good, girl, go do it. But accept yourself.
Right.
I just want acceptance. It doesn't have to be natural. If you want to go be blonde, go be blonde.
Go be blonde.
But be happy with that, and don't be happy without it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if the blonde went away and you can never have your hair bleached again, are you going to be that happy? And I hope that everybody asks themselves that question, and that's what I want to share as my plus one. Acceptance.
Yeah. Bravo to the person who you've become.
Thank you.
I think you should be really proud of yourself.
That's another thing that I want to have as my plus one.
Foundation.
Service. Service to your others that may need it or not. You know, like, I always promote donating as much time as you possibly humanly can to whatever foundations that you feel are suiting or whatever. I'd like to donate my time to two different foundations, and that's Beauty for Freedom and Precious Dreams Foundation. And whenever the New York Department of Education also has me. But yeah, always offer up a helping hand. And I grew up on that, and I always like to share that with people.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your transparency, for your words, and for speaking your mind.